welcome to Cannon Crew, a weekly podcast discussing the Charleston Battery. Your host, Granite, will be joined by other defenders of the fleet from the black and yellow supporters section, and together they will help fortify and conquer. They are the Cannon Crew.
Welcome to the Cannon Crew podcast. I'm Granite, and I'm here with my co-host, Ryan.
Hey, how's it going?
Going well. And Patrick.
I'm here. I'm ready.
Hey, we're here to talk about our battle down in Miami against our Eastern Conference rivals. We've never won down in Miami. We don't have the best record against them. Before we get going, let's talk about the lineup. There was a couple changes from last week.
It was Chris Allen coming in for Ikaza and the CDM role. Chris could have been doing extra well in the training session. He looked well on the field. But Ikaza, you'd have to think, you know, in the last game, he picked up that dangerous yellow card. And then he had another late challenge that with high studs that should have been another yellow and he should have been red carded. So kind of look at Ben and think of, is this like a little punishment for him, getting him just to kind of calm down a bit? You know, we're excited. We like the enthusiasm, but we want to see him still on the field and not having to sit out a game.
Is he just getting some rotation in here?
I mean, that's another great possibility, too. And just keeping the players fresh, getting Allen rotated in the mix, getting your best players or your good players rested, and getting some other players healthy and rested and back onto the field as well.
Yeah, I'd say the one glaring change that we didn't see happen that maybe we thought would happen was Archer back onto the pitch to start a game. So we'll touch on it a little bit later because we did finally get to see a little action from him. But seeing him warming up, looking really well, I was surprised he didn't start this one just with what we kind of expected from Miami with their attack play or more so their just speed and having that maturity on our defensive line. But it was at least nice that he traveled with the team. He's on the bench and he was our option on there.
Yeah, that was the great option. It was nice to see him coming into the lineup and then getting some minutes in, especially there at the end. Because I think that's the big thing is if you're out with a hamstring for a little bit, if that's what it was, trying to get back up to game shape can take a little bit. Now, we knew this was going to be a tough match. I think there was a lot of predictions about a lot of fouling and everything else. Ryan, what do you think about the match? Did it live up to your expectations?
It absolutely lived up to my expectations. I think we called it from the start. It was going to be one of those games. It was just a fight. Fouls were going to be called left and right. It was just going to be a gruesome battle in the midfield. Now, it was kind of interesting. We'll get into it, the early goals. But again, overall, it was a really exciting game and very physical game.
I feel the expectations for this match was coming off, obviously, a huge win, a really big win at home, a lot of positive play, and just looking to build off of that for us. So maybe the expectation for me was I wanted to see the chance creation and the players actually follow those up, finish the ball in the net. I mean, honestly, I was hoping for another 5-4-0 and just seeing the boys out there having another good ramp up on what is kind of seemingly the longest road trip ever, where we just sprinkle in a home game every now and then, including our next few upcoming fixtures. So I don't know. I was expecting us to come out hot and just start firing away from the get-go.
Yeah, and my expectation, we're going to do what we did the first couple matches, is come out a lot of possession on the ball, trying to protect with our center backs, but we playing a little high and just a lot of possession, some technical work, getting into the box, getting players out wide and spreading out that defense on the other side. And that's what we saw, I think, for almost all of the game. I mean, possession was incredibly high for us. If you look at some of the maps, our center backs were almost at the halfway line and their average positions weren't even across their halfway line. So it was kind of that's kind of what I thought was going to be intermixed with that fouls, which I was kind of surprised it was not as many fouls as I thought there was going to be. So let's move right into the match. And there's only a couple big moments other than us possessing the ball almost 60-some% of the time. And that was their goal.
You hate to see these ones. You just hate to see them. We first saw it. We were at Edmonds Host. And you're just thinking to yourself, what is the keeper doing here? What is Adam? What has he gotten himself into? I don't know if he took his eye off the ball or the player. I think he took his eye off the player and realizing where the attacker was actually at, because, you know, Miami's attacker just, I mean, it was no real touch effort to just go right past him. So I think he just kind of got caught in that la la land. And, you know, we're kind of expecting him to stay a little bit more tuned in with all the goals that he's gotten scored on this year, which is only two. So it's not many goals he got scored on, just the two goals. Both of them kind of came from simple mistakes where we kind of find him not being fully tuned in and not being the ability to where he can be and being as good as he can be. So I think he's still trying to find his groove, and I'm not too pressed or too worried right now because it's still so early in the season, but it's just still not a good look. But he does well to bounce back.
Yeah, I think to bail him out a little bit on this, there was a lot of poor play from a few players on this one particular, what do you call it? A long ball, because that's all it was. It was a smash and grab situation. Let's boot the ball as long as we can, have our fastest player run onto it and try and create something. I can't fully blame Dos Santos for being too far wide. He is playing as an outside back, but the ball was less than a foot away from him where you stick a foot out. Maybe he deflects it out, goes more towards the corner. Just with the initial through ball to him, to Gavilanes. But, I mean, you also saw Palma, center back, was way too high up the field on this play. He was almost in a center defensive mid position. So there wasn't that second center back covering, because the rest of our players are actually guarding man marking who is running on the outside of the box. So I think it's probably was just Greenwise trying to step up to make the play and just got wrong footed on it. I mean, he's not going to be the fastest player out there, the best defensive player. He's the keeper. He's there to stop the goals from going in the net. So I don't know. It's a little difficult. You don't like seeing it, like you said, right? You don't want to see your keeper out that far, but it would definitely have helped if he had a little more cover. But I mean, we're 9 minutes into the game. I don't even think the guys were fully ready for this kind of gut punch, just for the long ball, sprint through and have a hit. So I don't know.
We know that Gavilan is their number one man, and we know that he is the one that's going to, the ball is going to go to, and we know he's fast, and he split the Santos and Palma. I think it was Palma on that side, and was there all by himself in the open. And, you know, as for Palma being, it did seem strange. They were really in a forward position, especially for, it wasn't like a counterattack. It was a ball being played, I think, from the box area of Miami, and it was just a couple quick passes, some long passes, and it got us in a really bad situation. But yeah, Greeny needs to come out and get, if he's going to come out, he's got to come out and get it.
As a keeper, you're going to come, that's what we want from him as well. If you're going to come out, claim it. You put your hands to it. Obviously, he couldn't put his hands to it because he's outside the box. Kick it up the field, get it out of bounds. One of the two. He didn't do one of the two. But then he also then didn't make it difficult for the attacker. It was just an easy pass right by him. So that's where I'm getting at with him, saying like that is a little, you know, we expect a little bit better from him on that part. But no, it's not all of his fault, because at the end of the day, the ball has to go through all 11 people to get behind that net. You know, so there's 11 people who can all be accounted for at that time when the ball goes in the back of the net. You know, there's a lot more people here at fault, and it's just, you know, as a team, we just need to come back together.
That kind of sucks. Like Palma literally, I think for me, is just watching the replay back of that goal, and Palma is not jogging. He's not sprinting back to try and help. Say the goalie does force him wide to even get back into position to potentially cut an angle off for a shot on the goal. until he sees that he's kind of by him. Then you see him do like a lunge forward to start sprinting. I think it was just the effort on that play of like, if you're going to be that far forward and trying to help build up the play, the least you can do is at least put the effort to sprint back and show that you're trying to get back to cover it instead of just half-assing it a little bit.
Yeah. But that's another thing too with Palma himself coming in from last season. A lot of times he was flat-footed coming into the start of games. It took him a while to develop and to set into games and to get comfortable. And he did kind of look flat-footed for the majority of the games that he came out and started last year. And it's not like I saw it in the Oakland game. There was a few little miscues here and there, just the back line in general, and they all cleaned it up. They all looked good. They still got one goal on them. But then when you go into this game, you're kind of seeing a little bit similarity, a little bit mistake on his end. I got instant flashbacks with him not running back. I got instant flashbacks of Indy from last year where he got a red card the first 3 minutes of the game and we'll lose 4-0 and we're playing 10 minutes the whole entire game. And next thing we're going to get ready to talk about, we're going to go into it right here, is 3 minutes later. What a response.
Yeah, well, I mean, fortunately, we didn't have to wait long for a response to this one. I don't think anyone really got to see it live since broadcasters really wanted to show that goal we just talked about.
Yeah, the broadcasters, I don't know if we're just dealing with amateur broadcasters like we're amateur podcasters. I don't know. But it seemed really strange that all of a sudden they spent all this time showing Miami's goal in the middle of play. All they have to do is watch some EPL games and kind of manage cameras in the same manner as they do in the big leagues. It seems like somebody was very eager to just show off a single player at the expense of our player who's in the top of the league and scoring goals.
I mean, we had a free kick in a dangerous area. Who takes the camera off of open play in that situation to show a minute and a half replay?
I was going to say, this put a battery in another spot, though, that we haven't been yet this season, and that's being in a deficit position. You know, we're down 1-0 now in the opening 10 minutes. You know, I looked to you, Brad, when we were at the bar at Edmonds. I was saying, how are we going to respond? You know, this is the first time we've been down all season. Next thing you know, we pick our heads up, and we immediately scored and tied it, and you see Grinwis just, he's back in. He's fully focused. He's tuned in. He's bought into this game. He is giving his undivided attention fully into this game now.
You know who else put a head into this game? It was Nick. That was a great header. He muscled it and did what he was supposed to do, pointing that ball down into the corner. The keeper didn't even have a chance.
We talk about, for the past few weeks now, another set-piece goal and just believing that the players will get on the end of these balls and head it home. I mean, this is the third game in a row the goal goes in the back of the net for Nick, which, is there a player flying higher than him right now in the USL? I don't think so. I mean, you can argue for Gavilanes, but he scored two in one game the last game before this goal. I don't think he's playing on the same level as Nick is.
No, and I haven't looked at all the numbers. I wonder if Gavilanes has all the assists and all the other parts of Nick's game that is really adding to the team effort. You know, right now he's second in the USL. He's tied for second with USL with 3 goals out of 5 games. That's a pretty good stat. He needs to keep scoring. I'd like to see him get 30 goals this year, but we'll see. That's going to take a lot.
So, Ryan, what does this do to Grinwis? Because he doesn't even have time to hang his head from the previous play before we equalize.
Well, no, he had the moment to hang his head. He moped about it for the 3 seconds, and then he picked his head up, and we scored. He had to immediately overcome it. He has to then buy into it, and that's what he did. He bought into it, gave the game its full attention, and we never had an issue in the back for the remainder of the game, really. I mean, we had a few little iffy things here and there, but it was cleaned up quite nicely, and we had no errors and, you know, came away with the win.
And I was trying to look at Granny's. He's 12th in the Eastern Conference for saves. That's because there's not a whole lot of shots being taken on him back there.
No, he's only averaging one save a game.
Yeah, and I think that's a testament to our play in front of him, our backs and our midfield, and the possession that a ball that appears like this is Ben's way of playing.
For me as a defender, looking back, I almost like love these plays for my keeper to be able to get involved early on, because it's almost like changes their perspective for the rest of the game. I know for me as a defender, it does, but I feel like something like this actually helps him for the rest of the game because he's involved in the play and now he's trying to be a little more proactive in everything he's doing.
And even after that first goal, we didn't look panicked. I think that's a big testament to the abilities that we have and the confidence we have. We didn't look panicked. Of course, we got it back almost immediately, but everybody was just back to business. Let's just get back to business and let's do what we do. And we got some great results from it. At about the 42nd minute, there was a corner and a near post run.
Yeah, another great ball in by Malloy, and Smith coming out of nowhere, just trying to create something out of nothing. And you can't really tell if the goalie got fingertips to it or if it was just an inch or two over the bar, but another one of these great runs by our defenders in the box in a set piece to just try and head one home. I mean, making the runs, it's what you want to see from your players to try and get ahead at halftime.
And that's exactly what we need to looking forward and going into those tight spaces and areas, is that creativity and how can we get the ball to our best players and put it in those best situations for us going forward. And I was kind of, you know, Brad, I was saying this when we were sitting there at Edmonds Oast and how we called it on the last podcast. You know, I wasn't really sweating that it was 1-1. I saw how we are continuing to put pressure, but I didn't think we were going to score yet in my head because of how we called the game. And I truly believe that it was just going to be that frustrating of a game that we just weren't going to get the ball in until later in the second half. Going into the second half, really the only thing we're missing is that ball in the back of the net again to get that lead. We've done everything right. We've come back from in a position where we were losing 1-0, came back real quick within 90 seconds and responded. We had possession up. We're up 60%. We're getting the shots in. We got a few crosses. We're getting the set pieces. We're getting after them. We just have to keep the pressure up and just keep it on them. They're going to get flat-footed at some point. Continue the press just like against New Mexico.
Yeah, we were going in the first half. We had 14 shots. I think there was 4 shots on target. And just, I guess we got to keep that up.
Yeah. And the last thing too is to mainly protect our players. That's the first and foremost is our protection of our players, because again, we only have that 19-man roster, and any type of injury, Nick, is gonna hurt the roster for a bit right now, especially when we have a quick turnarounds next week. Then you look at after the goal too, following up with it. I don't think the ball even got into our final third. You know, maybe after another 20 minutes after our goal, we immediately won the ball back and kept the ball in their half the entire time.
Yeah, I mean, we had, leading up to half, we had, I don't know, 4 or 5 more chances, like real chances. We had Nick dribble in the box again, make a nice little move there, take a shot. I mean, their defenders were kind of packing it out, but it was almost like they scored, we responded. And then we just were like the older brother holding their head down on the carpet saying, no, that was a one-time thing you get to do. We're just going to go ahead and start shooting the ball at your net, and you're not really going to do anything to us for the rest of this half, at least.
Yeah, I think possession stats were at 63.8 at the end of the first half, and they were at like 36.6. So the rest of the first half was possession ball, passing it. They're kicking down, trying to get the long ball, and we're stopping it. So that leads us up into the second half. So this takes us into the second half. There was a little action.
Yeah. I mean, just like the first half, we didn't really have to wait long for another big chance, honestly, from either end. 55th, 54th minute, free kick, side of the box, throw in, foul, headed away by Molloy again. And then Miami is on a counter. They are, it was exactly like their first goal in the first half. But this time, Gutierrez, who, spoiler alert, Patrick's player of the match, tracked all the way back to stop this counterattack and immediately turn it into a counter for the battery where we had a 2-on-1. I think Allen had the ball and didn't end up getting the ball across to maybe try and score a goal off of it. But either way, just the play back from Gutierrez to stop Miami's counterattack. And then from their corner kick, us just immediately breaking away and trying to score on them immediately was so reminiscent of the first half and the two goals we previously saw. So, I mean, it was pretty much the only action, but it was right away to start that. Yeah, and then off this kind of counterattack, we finally got our first big controversy of the year. 58th minute, Allen takes down Galvanales on the halfway line. What were you guys thinking when you saw this? Because he was clearly on a breakaway.
Yeah, this one, you kind of see it as a tactical foul. You see it a lot with Man City and Pep Guardiola's system. That counterattack at the midfield, is he through on goal yet, or is he still considered not in that dangerous attack to where it's an automatic red card as like a last man defender? So it's a good strategic foul, but again, it was still that controversial call. It definitely was borderline. It could have been a red, could have been a yellow. It wasn't, thank goodness it was a yellow. Brad, what are your thoughts on it?
Andrew Booth is just a phenomenal player, I think, and I'm sad when he went. But if you look at, I think it's a yellow card. I don't think it's even close to being a red card because a couple things you have to consider as an official is, and I'm reading right from the laws of the game, the distance between the offense and the goal, general direction of play, likelihood of keeping or gaining control of the ball, and location and number of defenders. So if you look at a lot of those considerations, it was just tactical foul. He grabbed him. That's a caution. No more than that.
I'm going to have to disagree with you on this one. I think we slid past on this and got really lucky. That was it. It was 1v1. And we saw him break away with speed in the first half. I thought when I saw that ball coming, I thought he was gone. And it was a oh no moment for me. Like, we're going to see another him versus Grinwis. And I think we're lucky to get away with the yellow. I know it's at half field, but these are those gray areas that they talk about where he still has plenty of field to run on. I don't know. I mean, the yellow card comes and we don't see any more of them from this point. But for me, I think we were lucky on this play.
Yeah, if you look where the ball ends up way in front of the play, he still had to run quite a distance to get the ball and get it under control. And I can't remember who was over on the right-hand side, but he was basically even with the whole play. And I think he could have been that defender to be able to come back and cover if the tactical foul was unsuccessful.
Yeah, I'm glad it was. I'm glad it was only a yellow. You see him week in, week out. You never know with refs what is going to be the consistency of a call from week to week, yet alone certain fouls in the game. So I'm glad it was a yellow, but you just, exactly, as a fan, you never really can not hold your breath in certain situations like this.
Exactly. We're also the road team too, against a team that we've never beaten. And it's one of those heartbreaking, or one of those heartache moments where we're holding ourselves, where we're just like, is it going to be that red? Is it going to be the yellow? Where, yeah, Brad, at times where you slow it down frame by frame, you really look at it, probably doesn't look as a certain red, but in the moment can most certainly definitely be red. And we're happy to get away with that. Because you can look at it 2 minutes later with Ben Pearman taking Chris Allen off and bringing on Kaza. That was the thing we had mentioned earlier, is resting Kaza for that short turnaround of the upcoming week we have. Or did he really think it could have been a red, and instead of possibly keeping Chris in and getting a just a cheap little foul and that being a cause of another yellow and having a man down, going ahead and subbing him out.
That's a good point.
Yeah, I see the way you're going, but also looking at not only did he sub Chris at the 60-minute mark, which is traditionally when coaches start subbing people, but he also subbed Torres in. So maybe that was just part of the plan. At 60 minutes, these two players were coming in, and maybe Chris knew that, so he was going to reach out, touch someone. And I want to back up, because one thing I didn't mention earlier, which I thought was a very positive thing, is when Grinny, when that goal was scored, it might have been very tempting to go out and grab somebody, end up in that red card situation, and nobody did. And I think that shows a level of confidence that, hey, even though they score against us, we can still come back and win this game.
Yeah. And that's actually a great point you brought up too, is that Chris probably knew going in that 60th minute mark, you're coming off the field, looks up the clock, you know, 57th minute. Oh, snap, they got a quick counter. Hey, I'm just going to take him out real quick because I know I'm getting ready to come off the pitch. Quite smart, actually.
Patrick, I think you kind of said it. You know, we watch Man City do this. This is part of their normal play, as they just reach out and grab somebody they think might be a threat at the halfway line, and slows down the play, slows them down. Being on the other side of it, it's very frustrating, but I kind of say kudos to Chris for reaching out there and doing
that. I'm also a little curious if this is what we're going to start seeing from Torres all season, as in like maybe the occasional start here and there, or is he just going to be our 45, 50, 60 minute sub guy that comes on and continues to create chaos for us? I mean, Gutierrez was working his ass off, but the play I talked about a few minutes ago, that was actually him on the breakaway with Allen that Gutierrez didn't pass the ball. So I messed up on that. But like, is this the reason he's coming off, or is this like a pre-planned sub where Torres is just, you're knowing you get the minutes with him again, and like we're trying to spread the minutes around for our guys to keep them all fresh with such a small squad where they're almost promised enough minutes to keep playing all season to keep them all happy? So I think that's another sub at the same time where you look at, has Gutierrez come off for a couple of missed opportunities, or is this a pre-planned with Torres again?
Now, Pat, just to kind of talk, just to kind of speak on what you're talking about, with the type of team Charleston has this season with the 19-man roster, you look at this roster and you just named three different guys who are on our bench who could definitely be a starter. Like Jake LaCava could definitely be a starter and any other team in the USL. There's all the other teams, Torres and all of them, they could all be starters if they go anywhere else. Yet they're here on Charleston. We have a 19-man roster. That shows the level of the depth, the experience, and the skill level that we have on our bench. So when we have a person coming off the field and going in, we're replacing a starter for another starter. We're not losing any type of skill level. We're not losing anything. And we're actually raising our game, because when our opponents make substitutions, usually they're downgrading. You never really see it the other way around, unless it's for like a certain set piece or a certain moment in the game when you're trying to be more defensive or go more on the attack. You don't really have it that way, because, you know, that's a lot of money. It's a lot of money to keep that team happy. And just like how you said, how are you going to promise those players minutes when, you know, I'm a starter, I want my 80-minute game, but I'm sitting on the bench because I'm only getting 50 minutes playing for a team where we're really good, though.
It's a scary thought of like being an opposing team looking at our bench in that perspective of every single one of those guys could start on our team, and at some point we're going to have to face them, or the possibility of facing them against us in this game. So you don't know what to plan for.
So let's talk about Torres, because he come in. We're talking about the rotation of players. So against the Roots on it, 59 minutes against New Mexico on a 71 minutes. And then this time he comes on at 60 minutes. So maybe that's the plan. But Ryan, you're absolutely right. You know, it's a great luxury to have, you know, 19 starters. they can come in. We're not stepping down. And it's not necessarily like for like either. I think it was a great thing because it gives a different look to the opposing team. So I think it's a good problem we have.
And I'm kind of excited too, because I know that this is something we're going to continue to talk about throughout the season too, with this 19-man roster. It's, you know, it's going to be something that is, it's going to be interesting to watch as we go through the whole season, as it carries on through injuries and just through all the games we'll play, because right around the corner, we have the U.S. Open. You know, good luck to the teams playing tonight. You have the second round going on, so we'll find out, I think we'll find out in 3 weeks' time who we play in the round of 32 coming up. So then you have those games coming into play. So you have a lot of factors coming in, and just ready to see it.
It is nice. It's fun to play the game of who get dropped for who in the next game. Like, did someone play their way in? And then,
yeah.
I mean, it's great for us because this is what we get to talk about. But, like, there's somebody, it's not like someone's dropping the ball, and it's not like a like for like, oh, that guy has to come out. We've had this conversation every week now of like, I don't know, does he make it in? I don't know. The other guy also kind of played his off. So
exactly.
It's an amazing problem for us to have.
And as we talked about it in the beginning of the podcast too, with Ikaza being the one early change, with him being off and not starting and Chris Allen starting, that could have just been, you know, the rotation, getting the minutes, or who knows. But I kind of gave the shout out of it could have been just card trouble or something like that, because we honestly don't know. That was just the one change that we're trying to figure out what could have, what are the changes, you know, because there's such great players in this
mix. I like your theory better. We have to buy into the theories.
You know, pretty much. I think it's that, it may be that position on the field just isn't in card trouble.
Oh, card trouble. I thought you said card trouble.
Oh, they have enough gas in the tank there. They just keep getting those little scratches on the side. We got to take them out for about 45 minutes and rest them a little bit. It's a good thing we got about four more sitting on the lot.
Okay. Ryan, this is all you. The doctor is in the house. That's your boy. Give us an autopsy.
MD Myers, the golden boy, has come to Charleston, and he has brought it. Bringing us the 3 points. He's bringing us the golden win. What a goal. What a tap-in. It was beautiful. Everything about the build-up, the team play, it's what we want to see, what we want to continue to see, how we ended against Mexico, and how we're going to end on a high note against Miami after early struggles. This is what we build upon going into the next game right here. And it was quite amazing to see how we all just finally stuck it all together and got through to that final third, created the space, and created the shot opportunity. And it was, I say it was a tap-in because he should have scored it, and he did score it. But with that much space in between his shot, he definitely had to bury it.
Well, I want to take exception with your comment, the early struggles. I think we played our game. There was just that one little hiccup, and we just got back to business and ended up just doing what we do. Onside or offside?
Onside.
Onside.
Oh, onside. I watched it back. I'm a very big proponent of being told to myself, it's offside. You'll have to watch 3 or 4 replays, and we'll wait it out. Not even the full replay of the first one. Clearly on. Number 29, I don't know who he was, held him on the entire time. I just feel bad for Torres. Like, give this guy his goal. He is creating more chances off of rebounds for us to knock these home. And I just, a guy doing so much, and he hasn't had his yet. I know it's coming, but I feel a little bad for him on this play.
He's ricocheted off the post, but this time he hit it so hard it came off the keeper's chest and still bounced out about 12 or 13 yards. He's going to get one. You're right. And it's going to ripple the back of the net, if not rip a hole in the back of it.
Yeah, I thought it was going through the keeper's chest. So I just want him to get that goal. And then we could talk a little bit more about why isn't he starting? Why is he coming on so late?
Well, he has to come on so late to help Ryan out with his predictions. There should be a stat for like shots that rebound, and then the fox in the box takes care of the rest of it. Because that's what's happened twice to him. It's got to be a stat that helps out Torres on that, because both those shots were phenomenal, and just a little bit one way or the other, and he's putting it in the back of the net. But MD was just in the right spot, and the defenders just stopped. When that shot went in, it was like they just stopped and watched. And credit to MD for seeing that ricochet come off, and he was moving. As soon as that ball came off the keeper from an onside position, and, you know, at first glance, it looked like he was really offside by, you know, 3 or 4 yards. But when you look at, like you said, watch it for like 2 seconds, and you can see, yeah, he's in an onside position. And as soon as it creams off the keeper's chest, he's right there and nice and calm and cool and put it in the net. So,
yeah, I mean, that's the one where the defenders just, you see it, put their hands up and just pray that the line judge saw something that they didn't. I mean, that's great follow up. This is now the second game in a row that we get to see it. So, I mean, we talked about it the first week, second week, that the chances will come. These guys will grow more confident and just follow it up. And I mean, you play like for like players that are just, like you said, Ryan, all starters on this field and can be starters and playing at this level. They're going to start grooving together. So, I mean, this wasn't Torres's first opportunity on goal. Like 10 minutes prior, he had a shot across goal that almost went in for an own goal. Like, this guy is just continuously creating these chances that we seem to just knock in. So maybe, I don't know, if I was a striker, I'd want Torres on the field just to kind of hang around the 6-yard line a little bit and just knock a few home. Maybe pad the stats a little bit.
Maybe that's his game plan. I'm not going to score a goal directly. I'm just going to let other people score, but it's going to look really awesome when I do it. So how many different goal scorers have we had this season out of the 4 matches?
They'd be at 5.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive. Here we spread it out over 5 different players. And not just people up forward, but also a couple midfielders.
Yeah, you have a goal from a set piece from Aloy. You have you have a couple goals from Nick Markanic for when he was playing up top at solo striker for a few games, and then you have another one for when he was back out wide. MD finally picked one up sitting up top, and then I believe it was Conway and Gutierrez out wide also picking those up as well against New Mexico. So it's nice to see everyone getting in there into the mix, but that's also kind of showing you that early on we were trying to decide who we kind of want to fill into that mix, and getting everyone on the score sheet early and kind of mixing all that up shows that we don't have that one solid person, but we don't need that one solid person. Like, I kind of look at the Charleston team from last year, and you look up who we had up front. We had Augie up front. That was our Charleston attack, was Augie. You know, you can say we had Fido Barajas. We had Nick Markanic up front as well. Both of them did phenomenal last year. I'm not saying anything bad about them. They were both phenomenal last year. And obviously, we see Fidel is back. He is up in the MLS now. And Augie is obviously with another team. But that was our main focal point, was around Augie. And this year, we don't have that. And it's kind of like that mystery identity to other teams. And other teams are having a difficulty trying to figure out what we're doing.
You mentioned Gutierrez, but I think it was Rodriguez that scored the goal as the 5th person. Is that right?
Yeah, that sounds right. Speaking of Rodriguez, he did come off with an injury in the 72nd minute. So a little concerning, I think. Crawford came on for him. What do you think, Brett?
It is concerning because he's just a motor in there and he is going at it. You know, he's challenging. You know, I like it, but I don't necessarily like it. But he's challenging Malloy. There was a couple times, or at least once in past matches, where you can see the discussion on camera between him and Malloy, who's taking a free kick. And you can see him going, Rodriguez saying, hey, this is mine. Let me take this. And Malloy saying, no, this is mine, which is, I think, is a good thing that we have that much confidence in there. And so to take him off, and he might not come back. I don't know if he is injured, but if it is an injury, it is a little bit concerning.
Yeah, I mean, maybe this opens up what we've been talking about. Like, maybe Torres comes in and just plays a little more forward in his role, and hopefully it's not anything serious and just a little knock. But if so, we have the guys to back up where he can take a 45-minute break for the next game and then sub on second half and then get back to full health. I mean, no player wants to do that, but precaution, you know.
I mean, Pat, is that a possible prediction for me for the next game, considering that we do have Louisville on at home on that following Tuesday? So we have, like, you know, 2 to 3 days of rest following the Rhode Island game. Do you think that's a possibility for Torres to get the nod and get a full 40, 45?
Yeah, I'm going to go
compared to what he's getting.
I'm going to say Torres stays as our guardian angel coming on the 60th. And our boy Tattoo Jake is going to start that game.
Okay, I like that call. Jake Lukava getting a nod to start up
there. I think he's worked. He's worked enough. He's earned it. I mean, we honestly can't sit here and say every single player hasn't earned it, but you never know. You switch it up. We've seen from Coach, he likes to do what he wants to do and keep the other teams guessing. They really have no idea what we're up to most of this time. And then, but when they figure it out, they just go and sit back and hope we just don't score 6 on them.
Yeah. So, man, I'm kind of itching to see our practice game, just see how our team practices. I guarantee you it's so competitive right now. Just to see all of them competing for one of those starting spots right now. It's just like, I just want to be around it and see it, see each of them competing day in and day out for one of those spots. It's got to be a sight to see for sure.
Well, you know, Coach Pierman's used up all 5 subs, right? Every match. You know, and the one person that was not on the bench was Drack. Is that knock he received earlier in the season, is that still bugging him? And how does that affect selection for the Saturday match and against Louisville? When's Drack coming back?
You know, that's a good question. It's with the Santos, you have playing very well out in the left back, and you know, you don't want to immediately change him out, but at the same time too, you want your depth back in case if anything happens. And the knock that Josh took, it could have been, you know, a back injury, it could have been one of those lower leg injuries, and we're still not quite sure which it was. We haven't seen him out there on the training field like we saw Archer the other day. It's kind of tough with this week coming up because, you know, we just had the road trip to Miami. He didn't travel at all to Miami. So, you know, we weren't really expecting that. But then turn around going into this week, we're on the road to Rhode Island and then back home on Tuesday night for Louisville. So I wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't travel to Rhode Island, but I would hope to at least see him on the bench for Louisville at home on Tuesday night.
So let's play the game. Who replaces DeSantos if he gets hurt in the first couple of minutes? The next match. If Drack's not
if he were to get hurt?
Yeah, if Drack's not on the bench, who replaces him?
I think maybe you put Palma out there, honestly, because you're going to have Archer back. You're going to slot him back in, and maybe you just deal with that. Maybe switch to a 3-back system. You have Allen. You don't want to take Beloit away. You don't want any of these players not to be productive in the creation of our opportunities forward, but you have plenty of players who can slot in the wings, but I don't know, maybe he just switches it to a 3-back and just puts a little more cover in the midfield to almost play back a little bit with them.
Would you move Segbers in, or like, would you want to move him? Because he's vital down the wing. I think he would play a very good like wing back or a CDM role, and I think he could do quite well if you were to slide up into the middle if we were to do that 3-back.
Yeah.
Or would you take him out of that lineup?
I think you leave him in the way he's playing. That is too vital to the wing play to take him out of it. I don't know. Maybe what they call it, the inverted wing back, where he sometimes comes into midfield, and maybe you just have that as a false decoy of like a back 4, and he technically plays a little more central. But I just, for the way he plays on the outside and the balls he plays and the amount of crosses we get out of it from game to game, I don't think you could take him out.
I love that shout out you just said, that inverted wingback role coming into the middle, because that is exactly something I see Ben Pierman doing, with disguising a play seeing how you have your outside back. Okay, we see how they're playing four in the back, or okay, we see them playing three in the back now, and you're sliding that CDM back into the middle, clogging up that middle, and then boom, when we go up forward, now exploding out to the wings going forward. I can definitely see him using that further down the line.
So it looks like we're playing four at the back, and all of a sudden there's a midfielder, an extra midfielder, and we see it with another team that Patrick and I kind of watch, where there's a particular left back that all of a sudden he's in the middle of play in the center field passing the ball around. He's a much better midfielder than I think he is a left back, especially on the defensive part. But maybe that's something that's maybe in our future.
I mean, it creates chaos more so in the midfield, where, I mean, you could sit there and think like, oh, well, all they have to do is win the ball back and it's a counter. Yeah, but you also now are accounting for almost eight players attacking you, with three of them set back in front of the defense. So it allows your center backs in that type of position to almost cover more wide, where you're not playing three typical center backs, but you're playing more two wing backs and one center back who can free flow pass the ball around, which we've been doing all season with our center backs and our wing backs, is actually just playing the ball across and switching play to kill the counterattack. So I could see this happening. This is something we're already in the style of doing, and our play suits us to do this. But this is also a big if, and it's obviously something we have to look at with such a small roster, but the options are there, I guess.
So our captain, come on, with a couple minutes left to go, Leland Archer, great to see him back out there. And this kind of goes to what we were just talking about.
Yeah, we saw him come on, and we pretty much switched more so to a 5-1-3-1. So it almost looked like we were playing four at the back, because Archer came on for Nick. So obviously, I don't know, Archer's not playing up top. We can just rule that out for right now. But it almost looked like a three center back system with almost two wing backs that from time to time would shift into a four defensive back system, and then one would go forward, is exactly what we were just talking about, Ryan, with our wing play to help an attack. But then you still had a center defensive mid or two to cover that spot, so he doesn't have to just kill himself, gas himself out, sprinting back every time to cover his position. So it almost felt like we were testing the system out a little bit.
The 86th minute, Arcanic come off and Myers come off. We put on Archer and LaCava. So yeah, he kind of slid in that kind of, you said five back, you know, five at the back, but it was kind of that three center back role right in the middle, kind of on the right hand side.
Yeah, I mean, you have, obviously LaCava went up top, but this is a player I honestly see who can fit this more than anyone. Just the way he plays. Yeah, he wants to be up there and grabbing goals. Who doesn't? But like, I don't think he's one where it's a stretch to ask him like, hey, we need you to do this makeshift inverted wingback role. I see him more so as that player than anyone else on our team.
Wait, so you're saying you see Jake being that wingback
role?
Yeah,
more so just for hit.
Over Segbers?
Well, Segbers as in you're doing the four back and Jake almost acts like it and comes forward.
Nah, like,
so he's more so playing like a outside winger, but he just drops back and lets our, we have a lot of center mids, so they almost take it. He doesn't have to drop all the way back. Well, but he drops enough to cover, but he's our first attacking option out.
Well, right, but that's still normally playing as like a wing, as an like an outside guy, rather than if you use it as Segbers, you're using a true wing back role, whereas you're taking your back four guy and you're throwing him up into the midfield going forward then. So then you're leaving a sole three in the back. And then that's where your two CDMs come and tuck in, and we got really five in the back again. But Segbers is then able to go up and have cover coming back.
I was
back.
Thinking more so if we had to do a five-back system where we're playing just three center backs, where I like, yeah, I like...
And that goes into it, yeah.
I think we're on the right page where you're talking more so as like the classic four-back, and we do that inverted.
But yeah, going into the moment you go into the five back, you really have those three solid in the middle. And then those two are playing the wingbacks where they go up and then they can, like you were saying, they help out Jake and the wings and then connect through the midfield to switch the field of play. And that's honestly what I thought we've done quite well with, was just switching the ball around, switching the field of play.
We're almost at the end of the match. We're about the 89th minute or so. And there was a little play down the box in the Miami players were all up in arms trying to claim there's a penalty. Somebody's grabbing his head. He's laying on the ground.
Yeah.
Is it a dive?
I think it's a dive. I think Grinwist learned his lesson. He came out. He got ball. I mean, regardless, Archer was in front of the attacker the entire time until he almost got called off. You can see it. He almost like makes a shift to the side and goes off the ball. And the player just falls down. I mean, we talked about the dark arts not too long ago. I think this is one of those plays where it's the 90th minute and Miami's just looking for anything because they haven't had a chance. So it's boot the ball long and try and get a penalty call. I see nothing from this. I really think that was simulation on his end and we should have seen a yellow for diving on that.
Yeah, you're right. Archer's coming down. He's ahead of him. Sees Granny coming out and kind of lays up a little bit because he knows Granny's going to take care of it. And then the ball's a little high. Granny gets it and he just dives onto that god awful AstroTurf.
He also added a few rolls around on the ground too. So you can't really think that's the most serious foul that's happened in the game.
I do appreciate the rolling.
I think the ref did an awesome job in this game, just playing it fair and not overreacting to Miami, us being in Miami and the, say it again, lack of home crowd. But the guy's not even going for the ball. He puts his head down and he just tries to run through our goalie who's going for the ball, which you can't call that. 100 times out of 100, you can't call that as a foul. And I think he made the right choice.
Yeah, I don't think Grinny even touches it. And he's grabbing the top of his head. That's just ridiculous. But I guess you got to try it, right? I don't know. But I agree with you. The center official did a fantastic job, I thought. Sometimes calls go against you and you start going like, wow, what's he doing? But overall, I think he did a great job keeping control of the game and calling most calls fairly and evenly. And you can't ask for better than that. We've experienced some referees that might not have had their best game. I don't want to say they're not very good referees, but might not have had their best game and calls went against us. And this guy, I think he did a good job.
Yeah, I think for sure that's one of those plays that you'll kind of just hold your breath for a second because as a home crowd, you can see it going their way, but very big decision, 90th minute, home team down by one. And to not call that, I think is a bigger call for him to actually see it and have eyes on it. And this is one that I think, like, when you show refs around the league or you teach a class, this is one you can point to and be like, look at, just because of the timing of a game or the atmosphere of a game doesn't mean you have to just give a call because you think something might have happened when what you saw is what you saw. So stick to what you saw.
It is a great point, and people miss this. Is that you can only call what you see. If you can't see it, you shouldn't be calling it. If you think it happened, you shouldn't be calling it. The ARs out there, the assistant referees, there to help you have that discussion. They're all mic'd up. They're talking to each other the whole time. And it gives you that extra set of eyes, especially in that situation. So, thoughts of man of the match?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Gutierrez. I'm just going to go different because I know you guys have someone else. I'm not going to take your spotlight. But I think I know he only played 60 minutes, but the effort that he showed in that first half of not only creating, honestly, most of our chances, but the few defensive plays where he ran back. I mean, it just kind of reminded me of Malloy. So I have to give it to him just for switch it up, but the work effort was there. And I think he busted his ass and really made the difference for that whole first half for us to keep us in it.
So Brad, for my man of the match, I got my boy, MD Myers again. I got to stick with him again. He's gotten both my predictions right for me. He's done nothing wrong. He's gotten us into great play, two wins in both starts he's had for us this season. And he's, you know, that big man up front, pulling two defenders away, creating those opportunities for Nick up front. And I'm not saying that it's all because of MD. Nick's doing what he's doing. Nick's doing his own thing, and we're all coming together, and it's beautiful soccer. Quite impressed.
I'm going to go half and half. I'm going to go with Nick and MD. Nick's header was just incredible. He's got two defenders on him, and he puts it with the side of his head, the bottom corner. Keeper doesn't even have a chance. And I'm going to go the other half. Other half to MD. They stay, have the presence of mind to stay in an onside position and then immediately pounce forward before anybody else can react.
I'll give it a second half man of the match, Torres. Thanks for creating that goal. We love you again.
Agreed. I'll go with that. Second half man of the match, the ricochet king, Torres. So, Ryan, you and I were at the match. Patrick's off gallivanting the world doing fun things, and you and I were Edmonds Brewing Company, and something magical happened. Quite a few people showed up, and it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, quite a few people there. And that was my first time being there at a viewing party for the Battery at Edmonds Oast. I thought it was a great turnout. Got to meet a lot of people who I haven't got a chance to meet yet. And got to hear some feedback about the podcast. And got to talk a little bit more about soccer, a little bit more about my background, and really connect with the community as well. I know people like to hear about my shout out I had and wasn't stressed about the game at all when it was tied 1-1.
I want to say one more thing. Fuego. So you brought this jersey in that had like burn marks in it for the last match. And you didn't ever want to mention it because you're afraid it would have a bad light. But everyone there thought that was the coolest thing. So tell us what happened last match to get you on fire, Fuego.
Wrong place, right time. No, let's just say wrong place, right time for the home opener. And unfortunately, my brand new home jersey suffered some burn marks. And it actually kind of looks kind of cool. I'll have a picture posted on the Kane and Crew website and on Instagram once it gets sent back to me from the Battery. But the burn marks have actually burnt all the way through the jersey, so it kind of has that piratey theme to it. But yeah, a lot of the fans got to see the jersey and they were quite impressed with it, and they kind of were hoping to get their hands on their very own. So I don't know how to recreate those burn marks.
It's rough being on the Cannon Crew because there's a lot of sparks and a lot of fire flying. So let's talk about Saturday night, Edmonds Oast, another watch party, playing Rhode Island, another road trip. What are your thoughts, Patrick?
That was the first meeting. So, I mean, I watched a little bit of Rhode Island. I think we're going to have a really good game for the Battery. They seem a little flat. And I mean, we're up to third in the conference, and they're sitting in 11th. So I think we just keep playing how we're playing. And I'm excited to see the ball in the back of the net 6 times for us in this game. So I'll say that.
That's it. Is that your prediction?
6-0 is my prediction. Torres hat trick. He breaks through and he doesn't stop breaking through.
Oh, I like that. Ryan, what's your prediction?
I'm just going to keep it clean and simple with us going up to Rhode Island first meeting. I'm going to play just like how we did with our trip to North Carolina for the first time in a while, up to Raleigh area. I think the Battery could get a close win here. It shouldn't be a close win. The way we saw Rhode Island play last week against Tampa, you know, as soon as the game gets further and further into it, they kind of sit in. Once one goal goes in, multiple will keep coming. I'm just looking for the Battery to honestly just keep the clean sheet. Get Grinwis back on that roll, on that train. And for as I don't say this in a bad way, but for Grinwis to win the keeper award this year, that's going to be his only way to win anything as a keeper is going to be off clean sheets and win that Golden Glove award. Because he's not going to lead the league in saves and he's not going to lead the league in those types of areas just because of the amount of shots he's going to be facing.
Yeah, again, that's a testament to our defense in front of him. So Rhode Island is on a draw, and they're coming off a loss. They drew 1-1 against New Mexico first match, 2-2 against Monterey Bay, and got pummeled 4-1 against Tampa Bay. I'm going to go 3-0 to the Battery. I would like to see Torres get a hat trick.
It's a smart call because they have not kept the clean sheet this year yet. I feel as long as we do, we're good.
So any thoughts what kind of style of play we're going to see from Rhode Island? They're going to sit back, park the bus, try to put the ball over the top like Miami did?
That option up top, that really breaks them through against our defense. So
you got to realize who they do have up front. They do have the former 2023 Golden Boot winner as their new striker from Pittsburgh. Thaddeus has been scoring the majority of their goals, and they've scored every single game this season, either from him or plays off of him. So that's why I was curious to see if Charleston can keep this clean sheet. That's going to be a good testament for them, is keeping that big, because this is like a team that has a true, true big man.
But you have to remember, we have our big guy. Our big guy is most likely coming back too.
Well, I'm just...
And I mean, Pittsburgh's missing him. Do you think Dick was going to get past Archer in this game?
If Archer starts, I don't think he will. Archer's a beast. I think he's going to have a rough time because Archer's going to be, if he's starting, Archer's going to be hungry. He's going to want to make a statement. He's going to be hopefully back as our captain, and he has been beasting people for several years now, and I think he's going to do it again, especially on the road. Up there, a little bit cooler, he's going to be able to tear it up. So following Rhode Island, we come back home, Tuesday night match against the top team in our Eastern Conference. Did we get an unlucky draw that we're playing arguably the best team in the Eastern Conference at home on a Tuesday night when they know attendance is going to be low? What do we need to do to counter that?
Pack the point. Bring in all the kids you can. You pack the point. All the Charleston kids. Yeah, burn jerseys or not. Half jerseys or not. Torn or all. We want you there. We want you at the Battery Stadium. Patriots point.
It's time for all the regimental troops to show up. It's time for Bar Charleston. All of us show up. And show Louisville that when you come here, no matter what day of the week, it's going to be a tough match. When you have the 12th man surrounding you, beating on the drums, and you have to come through that tunnel and see what it looks like.
When you look that yellow wall dead in the eyes, you got fear struck in you.
Yellow wall. We'll talk about the yellow wall later. Saturday night, 7:30. If you can't make it down to Edmunds Oast Brewing Company, we're going to do another watch party. Hopefully, we'll get more people in there and pack that place. It's on ESPN Plus. Follow us on socials and at www.canicbrew.com.
See you on Saturday.
See you guys later.
Just a quick reminder, get there early. It's Bridge Run weekend, everybody.
Peace.
Your defense is terrified. Battery's on fire. Your defense is terrified. Can you feel the thunder? Be the fate of Charleston. Come to put you on.